podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Top Order podcast. Lots going on in this week in cricket for our topics today. We've got West Indies, Pakistan, some thoughts to add on New Zealand squads and plans. We've got English domestic cricket, the Royal London One Day Cup final and the 100. Wonder which one's going to get more press. We've got the Australian situation, a vote of confidence for Langer. Never good in politics. What is it like in cricket? And of course, we're going to talk about the England India series with the test match at Lord's having been wrapped up earlier this week. All coming up on the Top Order podcast. Stay tuned. So Lippy, I'm going to come to you first, I think, for West Indies Pakistan. Pretty exciting game there. West Indies getting home by just one wicket with Kumar Roach and old Sealsy getting the Caribbean boys home.
Yeah, geez, exciting day of Test cricket it was on, I think Tuesday, was it? It's all a bit of a blur now with lockdown and stuck in our houses. But yeah, very, very exciting day of Test cricket and West Indies. Just, I mean, what a performance. I mean, they struggled against South Africa in recent times. Pakistan, always kind of a side that can cause a lot of problems. But yeah, Kumar Roach, the hero with the bat. I saw a great quote from him. I think someone said, oh, have you ever done this before? You know, getting things home with the tail. And he said, I am the tail. So, yeah, classic work from him. But, you know, I think they were 16 for three at one point. Jermaine Blackwood played an impressive counter-attacking innings. But then they were 114 for seven. Enter Kumar Roach, nine down with 17 to get. I think he hit a six just with six to get. They hit an edge just wide of Rizwan. Went for four. You know, you just see the fine margins of Test cricket, and it was just a cracker to watch. And, you know, Jaden Seals, great game for him. Also, I think I heard that he became the youngest West Indian to take a five for as well in the same game. So, yeah, cracking game for him, and looks a real bright prospect.
We'll move a bit closer to home. But Raj, you want to come in on the West Indies first?
I was going to say it's good to see the West Indies putting together games again. They had that blip, as Lippy mentioned, with South Africa, but a good win at home against Pakistan, which they'll need for the World Test Championship. And also just wanted to talk about Jaden Seals as well. Looks like he is really some kind of bright shining light there for the West Indies, so I'm looking forward to seeing him bowl a lot more.
So we will move a little bit closer to home. Those eagle-eyed viewers or listeners will have noticed we had a little insert into the podcast last week with the news of the New Zealand squads being announced just shortly after we recorded our last episode. Stu, I'll come to you first, not to summarise your thoughts from last week, but just, a couple of points to perhaps feed in some thoughts from Raj and Baldy and myself as well.
Yeah, well, look, I think you guys have probably almost heard enough from me on the squad. I think if you haven't, you can any listeners can dip back into the last one and listen to kind of the first 10 minutes or so. I ran through all the squads, and I think no real massive surprises for me. Like a lot of new names getting their run in this Bangladesh and Pakistan series, which is now, I think, under a bit of doubt because of, the Taliban taking over in Afghanistan and all the ripple effects there, which no doubt will have some ripple effects for Afghanistan cricket and T20 World Cup sort of stuff as well. So a bit of a worry, really. But, we don't want to dive too deeply into politics. But, I'm really interested to see if you guys sort of share my thoughts. Is there anyone you guys expected to see in that T20 World Cup? Anyone you kind of surprised has made it? Yeah, what do you guys think?
So from the T20 World Cup perspective, I'm not too upset. I like that. They've gone with a good mix of pace, out-and-out pace, and also with the spinners as well. I guess my sort of questioning was just around, Ross Taylor. I guess we can sort of, this might be a bit rude of me to say it, but draw a line through him in the white ball stuff. That's the intention that I can see here. And also Henry Nichols. He's going over for the Pakistani ODIs. I thought that he might be an interesting one in the shorter form as well, but he hasn't been picked in any of those 2020 sides. The other overwhelming feeling I have is with that Bangladesh 2020 squad and also the Pakistani ODI league, is that team is just, you know, doesn't have any of our stars in it to an extent. I guess I'm just worried about falling into a similar trap like the Australians have, which I'm sure we'll go into soon. But yeah, we need to really start building some momentum towards that T20 World Cup.
Just quickly on Taylor, it was announced in the media release that he was picked for the one day side, but they kind of decided, you know, with the quarantine and things, going over for three ODIs, I guess probably wasn't worth it for maybe him and for the squad. But yeah, I do agree. It's then, you know, there's two completely different squads essentially for that T20 World Cup and for these the warm-up games that are not really warm-up games for anyone who's really playing in that top 11, but I suppose they'll be in the IPL. So I don't know. It was I think given all the different things, you know, it means we're going to get to see some different players. And I think that's probably the best thing I can take from it.
Yeah. For me, Lippy, just we'll come on to it a little bit later when we talk about potential changes for England. And the contrast here is that there isn't a lot of press around this, bar a couple of comments from Colin Munro about whether or not his international career is over. And that's really coming from Colin Munro, not necessarily the media. Not a lot of conjecture around this, which just shows what good shape New Zealand cricket's in, really, when you know what your makeup is going to be. I guess the big thing is just going to be conditions over there. So I see Adam Milne is tearing up the 100 at the moment and bowling pretty quicks in there as injury cover. They've got plenty of spin options in the squad as well, which I think is, you know, always going to be useful. But yeah, look, I guess there's a lot of water to go under a lot of bridges before we get to this T20 World Cup. You know, we'll find out what the bubbles look like. We'll find out whether there's a few injuries off the back of the, you know, the fact that these guys are operating in the red zone a little bit with all the bubbles they're in. So I'm sure there'll be some changes, but it looks a pretty handy and predictable squad in the best way possible for the Black Caps.
Can I just ask a quick question? Lippy, what do you make of Ajaz Patel? What do you think his role is going to be in those white ball sides?
I'm just interested to see what it's like. I suppose it'll probably be the Ish Sodhi kind of role in that he, you know, will be that sort of, I would say he'll bowl mainly outside the power plays in those games. But yeah, I'm interested to see. You know, he's had success in the Super Smash over here in the past, and then kind of just had his season wiped out with injury in the last 12 months or so, and then came back for the test. So yeah, I'm interested to see how he goes. He's got a you know, it would have been interesting to see the battle, if he'd had a full season, the battle between him and Todd Astle probably for that third spin spot, or whether they would have gone for another all-rounder that Todd kind of provides. So yeah, I'm excited to see him get a crack, because yeah, I thought he bowled really well in that England test that he did get a chance. And a couple of things I will just quickly point out before we move on from New Zealand, a couple of small notes, I guess. So the Bangladesh tour, the main thing to point out there is that games are starting at 4 p.m. local time. So that's actually 10 p.m. New Zealand time for any of our New Zealand listeners, which is a bit earlier than the Aussie series was starting. I think they're all starting at midnight New Zealand time, so it made it pretty tricky to watch. But hopefully, if you can spare a few late nights, then the Bangladesh night games will be able to stick up and watch them. We've got Shane Bond joining the coaching staff for the T20 World Cup, which is exciting. Obviously, a big friend of the podcast, and but also, you know, just whenever he's been around, particularly Trent Bolt, him and Trent Bolt seems to get the best out of Bolt, and yeah, very excited for him. And then just one final shout out to Molly Penfold, who's joining the White Fern squad after an injury to Rosemary Mayer. Obviously not the best circumstances, but I think all four of us had the pleasure of commentating her in the women's T20 final here in Auckland, and she looks a real talent. And so yeah, just a big shout out to her, and a great opportunity to go over there and give a real crack.
We'll cross to the other side of the world, I guess, for some news. Domestic cricket, front and centre at least for the next few days in the UK, with both the Royal London Cup final and also the 100 finals taking place. So men's finalists confirmed on one side of the draw, as in the women's team for the 100 as well. So the Southern Brave in the women's final, and they'll take on either the Oval Invincibles or the Birmingham Phoenix. Moeen Ali's Birmingham Phoenix in the men's final against either the Southern Brave or the Trent Rockets. Interesting news coming out of the England camp that both Craig Overton and Moeen Ali released from their England duties to go and play in the 100. If it had been the Royal London Cup final, I doubt that that would have been the same case. So whether Overton can get his Southern Brave team into the final, but I'll be rooting for my hometown Birmingham boys. Have you got a little bit of an eye on the tournament, guys? A little bit of New Zealand interest, Adam Milne, Glenn Phillips to name but a few.
Yeah, look, I'm Birmingham Phoenix all the way for me. I've really enjoyed watching them play, and particularly obviously the men's side. We've got the New Zealand connections with Finn Allen, who I think is going to be missing the final, unfortunately. But Adam Milne is, I think when we're touching on New Zealand stuff, Adam Milne is probably the one I would say who does feel a little bit unlucky not to be in that squad. Just in the sense, it's probably just conditions that have kept him out of that squad. Really, that they've gone with an extra spinner instead of an extra seamer, but I've been so impressed with the way he's been so injury prone the last, couple of years, but he's been able to put a full season together. And I guess it's almost been our off season almost with the BBL and then now in the 100, and was over in the IPL, didn't get much of a shot over there. But look, I've just been super impressed with how he's bowled. He's bowling, absolute bullets at times. And then he's got really mixing up his pace and just hitting the right marks. So yeah, just really excited to see how he goes, and with Imran Tahir in that squad as well, and I'm sure you guys have seen his celebration after he got a hat-trick. It's just fantastic. I can't go past them. I'll be cheering for them, no matter what happens in that final.
Yeah, the interesting bit of trivia for me is that Finn Allen jetting off to Bangladesh has led to the Phoenix calling up a guy who's actually got quite a few runs this year in first-class cricket for Durham. A chap called David Beddingham. He was, I think, top in the run scoring charts the first part of the county championship season. And he might be in a position where he actually plays on Thursday in the Royal London Cup final for Durham. And then joins up with his new Phoenix teammates the very next day. So could get two bits of silverware in pretty quick succession. So that was an interesting point for me as well. Shall we move on to Australia and Baldy? Lots going on. How bad is it when your coach is getting the vote of confidence, Baldy?
It's pretty bad if you're a football club. If you're a rugby league club or an English Premier League football club, your manager getting the vote of confidence means that you can count the number of days until he's sacked. Look, I think Justin Langer's job is probably safe through to the end of the Ashes, and if Australia lose the Ashes to England on home soil, I think he'll be sacked pretty soon after that. I think the problem that we've got is that this issue, it keeps on giving us lots and lots of podcast minutes to talk about this. But, for that Australia team that's preparing for a T20 World Cup and probably the most important home tour in a long, long time in terms of their Ashes at home, with England already struggling against India at the moment, England's in disarray. We shouldn't be giving England any chance of rebuilding their confidence and an opportunity to come back into this Ashes series. Australia have got to get on the same page and get on the same page quickly. But these rumours that Justin Langer has lost the dressing room and that his approach to coaching has got senior players and players in that Australian side offside is just not going away. And, key Australian figures like Adam Gilchrist have come out and lent their take on the situation, and it's just not good for Australian cricket for their tilt at this T20 World Cup or for the Ashes in the 21-22 summer.
But Baldy, you're always super diplomatic, so I am going to put you on the spot. What are your thoughts? Because this is a story that's not really going away. We've seen the documentary on Amazon where, I think there's a sort of mixed opinion as to who comes across well and who comes across badly out of that camp there.
Yeah.
And you mentioned obviously former players as well, some of them not too shy to be vocal around the fortunes of their national team, and rightly so, particularly if they've worn the baggy green cap themselves for a period of time. But what's your take on it as an outsider, but probably the closest outsider looking in of this little group on the Top Order podcast?
Look, there's no doubt about it that in 2018, that when Justin Langer was appointed national coach of Australia, Australia needed a coach like Justin Langer to get them back on track, both from a performance point of view, but also from a cultural and leadership point of view. Australia had a real problem in their leadership, both on the field and off the field, around the standards and the expectations that they set for each other. And I don't know where that went wrong, but that went wrong somewhere. And Australia needed a guy like Justin Langer to get them back on track, both from a cultural point of view and from a standards point of view. And it looks like he did a pretty good job of getting Australia back on track there. In 2021, I think those senior players and a lot of players in the squad, it's starting to wear pretty thin on them. Those exacting standards, that high level of emotion is starting to wear pretty thin on what sounds like some pretty senior players in that side.
And Lippy and Raj, for you guys, you've obviously got the American sports connection. Raj, you're our sort of health and well-being monitor on the podcast as well. Does that sort of hard taskmaster that, you know, it seems as if Justin Langer is really work in modern sport? And do you want to draw some comparisons for some of those world-renowned coaches and Lippy as well for you, particularly that NRL link?
Health and well-being person on the podcast. That's new for me, but no, I'll take it. I guess with Justin Langer, he is that hard-nosed coach. Like Baldy said, he came in at a horrible time. That's sort of what they needed, you know, and at that time. He knows what it takes to be successful at a high level. We've seen him do that. He knows how to get himself up. However, he's now in the position where he is a coach at elite level, and you've got things like, you know, the standard skills that you need, the sports science, all that stuff. You need that stuff just to compete. The real secret sauce for winning these days is actually giving your players the best chance to have an influence on the game. Is he doing that? I'm not sure. I don't think so. I guess the biggest sort of failure for me around that whole dynamic at the moment is he's failing to create a lot of leaders amongst the men within his squad. He came in at a horrible time, but the sort of leadership positions, now that, you know, Warner, Steve Smith were gone at that time, were given to guys like Tim Payne, Darcy Short, Alex Carey, Pat Cummins, and, you know, trying not to be rude, only one of those guys is probably going to be remembered, you know, in 20, 30 years' time. Great coaches, if we're going to draw that sort of bow to great coaches, they know that real change, real culture, real winning or success comes from within the playing group. And I don't think that that's what has been established at the moment. I'll go with your NRL one just really quickly. Alan Langer is a great one for me. When you look at culture or successful culture from within, he was the kind of guy that held everybody accountable. He was like, if somebody was not playing well, he'd ask for the coach or the trainer to get them removed from the field. He didn't want them on the field if they're not going to come out here and play to the best of their ability. That's kind of what you need. I do have an interesting point to make, and it comes back to that that Amazon series you're talking about, Binksy. Usman Khawaja. So he was one of those guys in the group that would stand up, be outspoken. He was showing a little bit at loggerheads with Justin Langer, and boom, he's not there anymore. He's not in the playing group. I find it interesting that I'll ask you a question, Baldy. When's the last time, you know, there's been no vacancies in that sort of test opening spot?
Gee, you'd have to go back to almost Hayden and Langer, I would suggest. After that, there's always been at least one spot that's been up for grabs. Warner's nailed it down for a little bit, but there's normally one spot that's been up for grabs at least since Hayden and Langer retired.
So Usman Khawaja averages 97 opening the batting for Australia in Test cricket through seven innings with 200s and 250s. But I just feel like he's getting a return. Maybe there are some ahead of him, but he's the kind of guy that people can follow. You've seen it in the Queensland dressing room, Queensland sort of reports that he is the kind of guy that can be followed.
And Sydney Thunder,
he's the kind of guy they got rid of, if you know what I mean, at that time.
And Baldy, just before we move on to the World T20 squad, which has been named, what about the backroom staff? I think a lot of nations that have been successful recently, you've kind of got that really core coaching group. Is Langer getting the support that he needs? We've touched upon the senior player and leadership group, but what about in terms of his backroom staff? I know they made some cuts, I think, as a result of COVID, ostensibly. Graham Hick was, I think, the batting coach and lost his job. So yeah. You know, who's around Justin Langer to kind of help him?
Well, the challenge has been that various players have come in and out. So guys like Ricky Ponting has come in and out. Brad Haddon was in and out there at one point. And there've been a couple of others as well. The challenge for me is all of those guys are similar personality, similar hard taskmaster kind of people that Justin Langer is. The challenge that they've got is they don't have someone who's a great man manager, a great people person. For me, standing on the outside of looking at that squad, that can relate to some of those players from a man management point of view. Raj, you touched on, you know, great renowned coaches. You think of rugby league, you think of Wayne Bennett, Bellamy from the Melbourne Storm. You think about American sports guys like Greg Popovich, who's been around for a long time with the San Antonio Spurs, Phil Jackson, Pat Riley. They're all hard taskmaster coaches. They set incredibly high standards for performance in their teams. There's nothing wrong with setting those standards. The challenge is that those great, great coaches understand each player as a person, as an individual, and that's where their relationship with that player starts, as an individual, not as a task-oriented coach. I think the challenge for Justin Langer, that he hasn't been able to transcend that task-oriented nature that made him successful and that may make certain individuals successful with relating to the players as individuals, so that the players know that the task is a professional thing, but the care and the relationship that they have with their coach is a personal one. I think that too much of this coach-player relationship is a purely task-oriented professional relationship, and not enough of it is relating to the players as individuals. Darren Lehman was ostensibly great at that. He's great at that with the Brisbane Heat. He was good at that with Australia. Unfortunately, Darren Lehman had to kind of fall on his sword around that time that they were in South Africa. So his job didn't survive that Cape Town incident. But he's the kind of guy who can relate well to players and potentially would be the person to sit in the middle, if you like, between the individuals and someone like Justin Langer, who can be a little bit too intense.
Baldy, we'll see how this sort of pans out. And I think from an Englishman's perspective, any turmoil that we can see, you know, the better. I think I said to you guys privately in the week, I'm hoping that the Ashes gets called off because, look, certainly I don't want that sort of time zone proximity for viewing what I think will be a massacre of the England side, but we'll see that play out. World 2020 squad named as well. I'll come back to you. Any surprises, any comments that you've got on the makeup of that squad? Because selection's been a little bit inconsistent, to say the least, for Australia over the past little while. What does all that tell us about this T20 squad?
Well, there's a few players that are probably unlucky to miss out. Alex Carey, unlucky to miss out. Josh Inglis, a surprise selection for many, not for me. He's been pulling up trees in the 100. He was incredibly successful in the Big Bash last year, I think, for the Perth Scorchers, his home team. So no surprises that he'll come in as backup wicket-keeping cover and top order cover for Matthew Wade. Kane Richardson, Mitchell Swepson, and Josh Hazlewood are all in the squad outside of that kind of core 11 of players that I would expect to play pretty much every game. Manus Labuschagne has missed out despite having a successful season in England. I don't think he was really ever in Australia's radar, given that they've got Steve Smith, Warner and Finch at the top of the order. But there's very, very little batting cover in that Australian side because they've also left out both Dan Christian and Ashton Turner out of the squad. Also no Ben McDermott as well. So Australia are effectively going with three bats at the top of the order and then all-rounders plus a wicketkeeper from there on in. Riley Meredith and Daniel Sams, Jai Richardson, also the fast bowlers to miss out on that squad. Kane Richardson, Hazlewood are both in and looks like Mitch Swepson will come in as bowling cover. So of those selections, no real surprises for me, other than perhaps Alex Carey being, will probably think he was unlucky to miss out. Raj?
A number of those guys, did they get named as reserves, like Dan Christians and Daniel Sams? I think they are.
Yeah, they're named as injury cover reserves, yeah.
Do you think, so I guess the question's going to be, I'm not up to date with this, is the 2020 World Cup straight after the IPL on the same wickets?
It's straight after the IPL in terms of tournament scheduling. It will follow straight after. I'm not sure if they're going to play on the same tracks. They might leave one or two on each square for the T20 World Cup, but it'll be the same kind of decks.
Because I do feel like even if you look at the New Zealand squad and you look at this Australian squad, they've left out those real speedsters, you know, those ones that we saw at the IPL, that they actually, those are the ones that went for the big money. So we might find that there might be a mistake if we find the ball is traveling through at night. But all the indications are here that it's going to be a massive spinning World Cup. And I guess that's why Swepson got his go as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Australia could play up to four spinners if you have a look at Maxwell as well, bringing the ball into the batsman, whereas Agar, Adam Zampa and Mitch Swepson will all take the ball away from the right-hander. So Australia do have some options there. Australia do have also Cummins and Stark who can bowl well into the 140s as well. So we're not shy of pace, but we don't have an out-and-out speedster who's 150 plus like Riley Meredith.
It's funny looking at all of these squads, this Australian squad, and, you know, we've had so much chat around, you know, how weak it's looked at times and how disjointed and stuff. But as soon as you throw some of those big guns back in there, suddenly, you know, you look at that 11 and you go Finch, Warner, Smith, Maxwell, and you go, well, actually, that's quite a damaging top order, potentially. And then the likes of Cummins, Stark, Zampa, you know, very, very good white ball bowlers. So, you know, I think that the top and the bottom of the Australian order now suddenly looks a lot stronger. That middle patch, though, is still the one that's big question marks for me, with the likes of Marsh, Wade, Stoinis, whether Ashton Agar is going to have to bat seven, which you've mentioned many times, Baldy, about kind of being too high. And, you know, so, yeah, a lot of for me, I think there's a lot riding on that top order to really pile on the runs, or Australia's going to be in some trouble.
Yeah, Marsh at five makes me feel a little bit happier. He's been in great form. And then you've got Stoinis and Wade probably batting at six and seven. My hope is that Australia go in with four bowlers, Cummins, Stark, Zampa and Agar in most of their matches, which would give them plenty of batting depth. Stark would bat at 10 in that situation. So Australia have lots of depth in the batting, and that would also give them four overs from Maxwell, Stoinis and Marsh combined. So, you know, if you think about Maxwell being able to bowl at least two overs in most T20s, you only have to get one over each out of Stoinis and Marsh in most of those situations, if you think about those other bowlers probably bowling most of their complements. So as long as all those players turn up in form and injury-free, Australia have got the team on paper to do well. My challenge is that they haven't played cricket together like New Zealand have, like some of these other sides have, consistently in the lead-up as a unit that will build those relationships and can help teams win the key moments.
Yeah, and that's the point I was going to make, Baldy. These guys haven't played that much cricket together. The other thing is this squad sort of, I guess to an extent, ignores some of the guys that have been really, really successful in your domestic tournament in the Big Bash. You know, the likes of Christian, Daniel Sams, Jai Richardson have all had stellar seasons for the last probably 2 or 3 years in that domestic tournament, and it's probably just showing that perhaps there is that gulf between even the what is probably the second best franchise tournament, the Big Bash after the IPL, and the international game. But look, I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about the IPL and the World 2020 coming up as we get a little bit closer to the tournament. But that probably wraps up this week in cricket for now. We will be back after the break to talk England, India, and wrap up the podcast for this week. Stay tuned.
Okay, it's never a good sign when Binksy is not leading into the podcast after a swish. It can only mean one thing. Binksy, I take it you weren't very happy with England's performance in the second test.
Yeah, look, I don't know, guys. I was saying to you all throughout it, and to be fair, you didn't actually indulge me too much on the Slack channel. You kind of didn't, you know, you didn't bite, which was surprising, particularly from our health and wellness coach. And he normally comes in with quite a lot of stick. For me, I thought I was watching a different game to most of the pundits the first couple of days when Joe Root won the toss, elected to bowl first. Look, I guess hindsight would say we got a first innings lead, but it still seemed quite a strange decision, more around probably protecting the batting lineup than what conditions were available on that first day. Didn't bowl particularly well in the first session, but you've got to give a lot of credit, I think, again, to India's openers. Rohit and Rahul looked a different class to our two guys. Not surprisingly, to be fair. And then, look, again, all of the talk on that final day was, you know, have we got enough runs? You know, when are we going to bowl them out? What can we chase down? I got up and thought, it doesn't really matter. I think India have got enough now, and was kind of proved right in that thinking, because we folded like a pack of cards again. And Joe Root, look, I really feel for him. I don't know what's going on in between his ears, but he took the criticism for some of those tactical decisions, rightly so, on that last day when he let, Shami get 50 odds and Bumrah, who averaged about 0.7 before, got 30 odds. So he came and almost admitted that that was his fault, which, was good in terms of honesty. But he also got, again, 200 and something runs out of whatever our complete total was. I saw a stat flying around that there's only probably Bradman up there in terms of someone who scored a higher percentage of his team's runs over a prolonged period of time. So someone's got to stick their hand up and help Joe Root. And this isn't going to get any better, because all we can really do is shuffle the deck chairs. And even the deck chairs we've got are still pretty shitty deck chairs at the moment. So, I don't know. I can't even get passionate on my rant. It's that bad, to be perfectly honest.
I want to pull you up on one thing, though. I really feel like, as you say, that India, or that England, just never had a chance. You felt that they didn't have enough, enough. They were never going to chase down India's total, even on that final day. I mean, as for me, when Pant went early, Sharma goes not long after. England are definitely in the box seat in my books. I would have backed them all the way if it was under 200. I think it would have been a real test. It might have been very close. Obviously, India was pumped up and they came out and bowled particularly well. But it was that first session that just completely derailed things for me, rather than the way that England played for the rest of that test. Even though I think, obviously, there are some flaws in what England has done.
Well, if it had been 200, we'd have still lost by 80 runs, Lippy. So, I don't think it really mattered. There's no sort of belief in that side. And look, probably rightly so, to be perfectly honest. And there isn't really an answer, but they've made a few changes for this test coming up. But look, we were never at the races, I don't think, from a confidence perspective or from a skill perspective either. What about you, Raj and Bordy, as neutrals looking on?
So I'm actually in agreement with you, Binksy. I think that India were actually, I felt they had enough runs at the end of day four, or enough runs in terms of they had wickets. If they batted for an hour and a half, in England, we're almost probably not going to try chasing it down. We saw that in the New Zealand series, where they didn't really try to chase that down in the fifth day. So that was my kind of thinking there. I guess my concern, we've talked about the English batting a lot, and Joe Root, what a display of batting in that first innings. He looked incredible, as he did in the first test. But he just doesn't have any help. I mean, the 120 that they got in that second innings, or on the last day, India bowled 29 extras in that innings as well. I felt they actually bowled really poorly for the first part of that innings, and then they bowled outstandingly in the towards the end there. But I'm actually on board with you there, Binksy. I actually think that India were well placed throughout the whole of that test match. Baldy, I'll just come to you with a question. How far do you think that England were behind the eight ball after day one?
All right. Behind the eight ball at, what was it, 230 for what were India at the end of day
280.
One? 270 for three, having been sent in.
276 for three.
Yeah. So at the end of day one, having been sent in, the opposition puts almost 280 on you for three, and Kohli doesn't get 100. That's a massive, massive, massive failing for England's bowlers to back up Joe Root's decision to win the toss and bowl first. I mean, anytime you get, again, England have got Pujara, Kohli and Rahane out for a combined total of 52 in that first innings. So, they did the hard work getting that middle order out. They're dangerous players, those three, and they've again dismissed the three of them for under 55 runs. But they just couldn't get rid of Rohit. They couldn't get rid of KL Rahul, who I thought played an excellent innings on day one. We talk about those openers. those openers' performance on day one to blunt that England attack and to get their side through to 126 without loss through the first 40 overs of that test match, that was just outstanding. I don't think England stood really much of a chance from that point on. Once that those two openers got a 100-run partnership having been sent in, England were always fighting to save the test match. And I think, you know, Joe Root is a tremendous fighter and he does a lot of work fighting to save test matches, but I don't think England were in a really good, strong position to win the test match, even going into the final day when India, you know, won 70... Well, 181 for six at the end of day four, India still had enough to put England under real pressure. And there could have really only been, in my view, one winner on day five as long as India didn't collapse, and they didn't. An excellent, excellent partnership that was allowed to happen because England adopted some incredibly negative tactics. They didn't try and dismiss the tail end batsmen. They tried to intimidate them. And that works if you're Neil Wagner, but it doesn't work if you adopt the kinds of fields that England adopted that had no attacking option for those bowlers to bowl those batsmen out. Enough balls on the stumps and you will dismiss Jasprit Bumrah and you will dismiss Mohammad Shami within 20 to 30 balls. End of story. It's happened all through their test career. If you don't bowl on the stumps, yes, you might intimidate Jasprit Bumrah a little bit and you might hit him on the helmet. Yep, absolutely. You might intimidate the guy physically, but they didn't get him out. And that's the real important failing in that tactic, is that if you adopt that tactic, it has to work and it has to work quickly. If it doesn't, you leak runs and you leak runs fast. And that's the problem that England faced on day five.
My other thing that I think that England really struggled with was, I think Mark Wood carrying that injury on the fifth day.
Yeah, that's
was
tough.
Massive for England. He's been incredible for them. I see he's been named in the test going forward, but not sure if he's going to play, but he's been a massive part for them this summer. Binksy, you mentioned the captaincy. I just want to talk to you about Virat Kohli's captaincy. What do you think? How did he go about that fifth day, and what did you like or not like?
Look, to me, Kohli, he reminds me a lot of Ricky Ponting. I really don't like the bloke, but I've got to have a begrudging admiration for him because he really knows how to wind up an opposition team and often, you know, from a runs perspective, is a thorn in the side as well. Look, I think he played a very clever role, really, in that entire component, which is, he just sort of, he was the, you know, he was the sort of kindling, wasn't he? He wasn't the big log burning the fire. But look, he certainly made sure that he got the right level of oxygen and the right level of kindling into that entire process to wind his fast bowlers up and wind up his attack dogs. And look, you know, India have won that battle both from a verbal perspective and obviously also with the bat and ball as well. Lippy, I know you want to talk about him. He's, you know, you've got a poster of him on your wall, I think, above the bed. So you want to wind up on Kohli?
Oh, look, it's probably an unpopular opinion, but I sort of love the way he goes about things. And that's probably just, you know, I don't like that he's, there's videos emerging of him swearing and all of that kind of stuff. And obviously that's not ideal, but I just love that I'll caveat this with saying I hate it when he's playing against New Zealand, but anytime I'm watching him against anyone else that's not New Zealand, I just love the passion that he plays with. And you can see how much, I guess, it means to him to win and how much, how important it is that he wants to win. And you know, I guess when I was playing cricket, I had that on the field as well. I just loved that passion. And I was probably a different person on the field than I was on it as well. And I can kind of relate to that a little bit. But, you know, the fact that he's not a good batsman anymore, at least now he is performing as a captain and inspiring his players.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I guess the points I wanted to make about Virat Kohli is something that he hasn't really been given credit for throughout his career. I think tactically, he was spot on with his bowling changes. He had Bumrah and Shami open the bowling in that second innings, a change from Sharma. They were up, they had their tails up, they just batted well, and they had England 2-for-1 in the couple of overs that they bowled straight after the declaration. He also had his fields and that declaration spot on as well. I think he did a great job there. But what I find interesting is the most enduring memory I have of this test match on that fifth day is Virat Kohli carrying on like a pork chop, like you said, a little bit. Baldy's there. Baldy's mentioned his aggression. Why is it okay that he does that? That's a great question from Baldy. I think that Virat Kohli's aggression is definitely not aimed directly at the English guys. You could see he ran away to the crowd a lot when wickets happened, not towards the batsmen. There was a lot of banter going back and forth between the teams. But I think the way that he conducted himself was right on that line where he needed to be to get his team up and to kind of gain some ascendancy over his opposition.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, Raj. I think he's right on the line in terms of the aggression that he brought to that fifth day of the test match and probably throughout his career. He walks that line really, really finely, and he manages pretty well to stay just on the okay side of that line. I think a lot of kids watch cricket, and I don't think a lot of kids or parents of young kids would enjoy watching him swear on the cricket field and that kind of thing, but he is very aggressive. He does wear his heart on his sleeve, and you can't fault him for that. I think he just needs to, you know, be a little bit careful that he doesn't get too carried away, and then he keeps himself just a little bit under control. As I say, you know, you never go full Australian. And I think Kohli's just got to watch out that he doesn't go full Kohli. You know, he just needs to rein it in just a little bit. And if he's going to needle, just needle from a position of just kind of reining your emotions in just a fraction so that he keeps his charges in particular under control. Because we know Ishant's fiery. We know the Indian team can fire up and can get aggressive. So we just want to make sure that the test is still played in the right spirit, even if India are taking an aggressive approach to diplomatic relations with England at this point.
We'll come to Lippy next, but Baldy couldn't agree more. We just need to keep Virat Kohli out the walkabout. That'll be where the problems start, I think.
Look, can I just bring it back to, you know, we've talked about Virat Kohli's aggression and all of that stuff, but to me, the test got away. I said in that morning on day five, and I'm really interested in why England got so up in arms about, obviously Bumrah was bowling those bounces to Anderson, and it really seemed to just play with their minds so much. And you could see it, what they were doing in that final day was trying to give it back to Bumrah rather than actually worrying about winning the test. And, you know, we touched on that a little bit, but why do you think that interrupted them and really got in their heads so much?
Yeah, look, I'm not entirely sure. I think there's a little bit of history between the two sides. And look, I think I mentioned Kohli's lieutenants before. Jadeja's been involved in a little bit of verbal stashing, particularly with Anderson, I think, back to that 2014 series. I also think, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen the other. And quite often, the team that lose the test match are the guys that, you know, come off with probably the worst of it. And look, I think as much as I love Jimmy Anderson, he is not shy of giving out plenty of verbals. You know, he's an aggressive guy on the field. So look, I actually don't see too much of a problem with it. I think both sides were probably on the line. The difference is that India were able to probably control their emotions slightly better. And I think the biggest thing for England is no one seemed to help root out on that final morning. You would have hoped that a guy with 600 test wickets, and maybe he did, but you would have hoped that a couple of the senior players would have come up to Root and said, mate, why have you got more men out on the fence for Jasprit Bumrah than we did Rishabh Pant? And why are we continuing with this ploy when every single bone in my body says, let's just get a couple of slips in and bowl fifth stump for 20 minutes and that should do the job. And look, if it doesn't, then bring the spinner on to toss up a few or try and rough someone up. They just didn't revert to plan A quick enough. And look, only those guys on the field will know whether that was the emotion getting the better or whether it was a plan that they just stuck with for too long.
Let's go back a little bit and, you know, maybe move to India. You've already touched on Kal Rahul, Baldy, and what a great job he did. And, you know, we've talked about Rohit Sharma. And I think Rohit Sharma probably hasn't piled up the scores lately, but he's actually, it's sort of the stability he seems to bring to the top of that order. And they seem to get off to a good start. I can't even remember the stat, but I think I saw some ridiculous stat about the English all openers in the last few tests and just how quickly that first partnership has been breaking and just that, I don't know, it was something that it maybe at 10 minutes or something, it was so short that there'd been a wicket. And whereas India, it always feels like they kind of make it a nice start. But it was, I suppose, encouraging from an Indian point of view to see Pujara and Rahane both chip in with a few runs. You know, they're probably both a little bit disappointed that they didn't kick on a bit further. I think if you look at the Spark Sport highlights, day four when they were batting, funnily enough, there's only 12 minutes of highlights on that day and all the other days are 16 to 25 minutes, probably because of the way Pujara was batting. But, you know, what do we make of India's performance? Because I think it, for me, it really felt like they galvanized themselves with that emotion that was going on. And that felt like a really big win for them, because as much as you guys have said, look, England was always on the back foot, I feel like India at least felt like they were up against it on that last day, and they really put in a performance that, you know, showed their dominance and potentially can kick them on in this series to win it and win it well.
I think as an Indian fan, you're really impressed with how a guy like KL Rahul has come in to a spot he's not familiar with and taken it with both hands, nonetheless scoring those runs in England where we know it's hard to score runs. Then you've got guys like Siraj as well, who I think he's actually overtaken Shami. He's probably done it, maybe not this test, but a while back as well. He's overtaken Shami into that third seamer spot. And he's bowled well in Australia. He's bowled well in England. This is the sort of remit that we saw India put to themselves 5 or 6 years ago, that they need to go around the world and perform. And they're starting to do that consistently, which is really important. The last point I want to make is, I do feel that there's a little bit of an anomaly with the way that the Indian lower order flexed their muscle there. They did do something similar in Australia, but that was with Washington Chunda. They're actually, you know, he is recognized as a batsman. Here, I think it was more some tactics that were not great and a lot of luck that they had. I don't see it happening often, but it worked really well for them and set up that win in the end. But I think overall, if you're an Indian supporter, you're happy that it's not Kohli going out there and dominating. It's not Bumrah going out there and dominating. It's across the board. Baldy.
Yeah, well, that was a huge innings from Rohit Sharma. That 83 that he made in the first innings, his highest score away from home. He averages 79.5 in 18 tests at home in India. And in 22 tests away from India, only averages 28.86. It's the biggest home away average differential in the history of Test cricket by some distance. So Indian fans will be pleased that Rohit Sharma has, you know, he's made 750s away from home, but never got to 100. So, you know, that's huge for him, to give him confidence that he can succeed in English conditions. And, you know, you're right, Raj. All of these Indian players are starting to step up and be counted. And it's not just Virat Kohli and Rahane doing all the hard work and Pujara doing all the hard work. All of these other players are starting to step up as well, which doesn't bode well for England's chance to come back in tests 3, 4, and 5.
Binksy, on that front, England's just named their squad for this next test. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think we've obviously seen a couple of changes? Sibley gone, Crawley gone from the squad. I think in Sibley's case, it just had to happen, that he just doesn't look like he's going to get any runs. But, you know, do you think that the guys that have come in, Milan, do you think he slots straight in?
Yeah, look, I think he's going to have to slot straight in. If you look at the personnel that are there, I guess the only way they could potentially go is that Ollie Pope comes in and bats number three. Looks likely that Hamid will bump one up the order and bat in the spot that he started his test career in and where he's played a lot of his county cricket with Rory Burns. I think it would be strange if they brought Milan in and he doesn't play. For me, I don't think they've gone far enough. On Sibley, he's played 22 test matches. And I know this has been repeated ad infinitum, rather give a guy one test too many than not enough. There's some guys around, and one of my good mates from England made a comment on one of our WhatsApp groups that just said, I'd rather watch James Vince score a pretty 27 than watch the way that Sibley gets 27 any day of the week. And you know, someone like Vince was only really afforded, I think, 13 or 14 test match opportunities. When you compare to you know, how much rope, you know, they've given to some of the other guys, I just find that a little bit strange. So, look, I think Crawley's time will come again. I don't think Sibley's will. But as I said earlier on, I think it's just a case of moving the deck chairs around. So there weren't really that many options unless they went massively outside the box and looked maybe to this 100 tournament and kind of picked, I suppose, guys like Liam Livingston, Smead, who's been going pretty well for the Phoenix as well, and said, you know what? If you can play against some of these overseas bowlers, yes, it's going to be a change in mentality and mindset to come into red ball cricket versus white ball cricket. But some of the best players in the world have done that pretty successfully. If you look back in, you know, the not too too distant past for England, Kevin Peterson would be a great example of that. They just, you know, trusted that class was going to prevail as he made his way through white ball cricket into red ball cricket at the expense of a couple of other guys. So, bowling-wise is probably the other worry for me. Baldy, I can see you itching to get in, but I've got a train of thought going.
Do you mean look, batting and the bowling is a worry for you?
Oh, well, look, the batting's been a worry for a while, Raj, but the bowling, they were saying, and Stuart Broad, I think, made a comment that based on all of the, you know, the analysts and the strength and conditioning guys, saying that most of these bowlers now, with the amount of cricket they're playing and the bubbles that they're in, are in the what's called red zone, so they're in danger of injury. James Anderson, an injury doubt coming into this Lord Test match. Stuart Broad obviously out. Wokes on the long-term injured list. I've got to say that I think that's because he's not had enough load, because he's been just carrying the drinks and been in every single bubble without really playing both One Day and Red Bull for the last year or so. But that injury concern to Mark Wood, Jofra Archer, Ollie Stone means we don't really have that genuine pace. So yeah, I think it, you know, it's a little bit of a right arm at medium pace with a little bit of left arm pea shooter from Sam Curran to add into the mix, which for me, that's also going to be a worry with, you know, still three test matches to go.
I think you're a bit harsh on Sam Curran there. I think he's looked likely to move the ball about and create a little bit of point of difference for that attack. I'm just mindful.
I'm just really referring to his pace more than anything.
Right.
He absolutely makes things happen. I don't doubt that. And I actually think he'll turn himself into a pretty decent test cricketer.
Jack's
and his
jealous.
Stats are comparable to others. But it's just all a bit samey. It's all a bit sort of 80 to 82 mile an hour without, you know, without someone like Mark Wood in the side.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think we just need to be careful by, you know, looking towards the 100 too much. I mean, we did that with Jason Roy a few years ago, and that wasn't a successful experiment. So I think you do need to have a little bit of red ball chops to be able to come into that England squad, particularly if the pressure is going to be on you from the get-go to bat for long periods of time and score runs at a decent clip. So I think we just need to be wary that we're not sort of throwing players in to that England squad that aren't set up for success. I think Hamid has got a bit of promise. I'm disappointed that Zach Crawley hasn't made enough runs to keep his spot in the side. But yeah, look, it looks like England are still searching for answers.
On India then, how do we get Ashwin into the side? I really want to just see Ashwin bowl, at least in one of these tests. Can someone tell me how Ashwin can make this side? Because I don't see how you drop any of those seamers at the moment.
If he's got an English grandmother, we'll have him.
I think the only way he gets in is if there's a drought or an injury. I mean, really, that's the only reason I can see him getting into the side. If the groundsman accidentally cuts all the grass off the wicket 3 days before the test match, I think that's the only way that India would change the makeup of a very successful bowling attack at the moment, who's really got the wood on England.
What about another left-hander coming in, like Milan? That might bring the off-spinner into play?
I hope you're right, Raj. I just want to see him bowl. You know, he's such a good bowler. I think we've all said that he's the best spinner in the world in the test match format. I sort of feel like he should be in that side, but I just can't figure out who to leave out.
Well, the thing is, England's not even picking a spinner. Well, they're picking Moeen Ali, but they're not picking a frontline spinner. India are picking Jadeja, who is not their frontline spinner. So this is coming down to who's got the best pace bowlers. What does the outlook look like, Binksy, for the next test pitch-wise?
Yeah, so they'll be playing at Headingley, so not really renowned for offering a massive amount to its spinners. Normally got a little bit of bounce. I don't think India are going to make a change. Why would they do anything different than roll out the, you know, the majority of the guys that have been successful? They might look at one of the seamers' workloads, but Again, it's not like it was too taxing bowling England out for 120 on that last day. So, look, I think that they'll probably go in with same side and same again, please. And look, I can't see England forcing a victory now. That they've got to be destroyed from a morale perspective. And how many times can Joe Root go back to the same well and bail his team out?
Look, if maybe India could go do something out of the box, maybe leave out a Pujara or a Rahane and pick Javo, maybe. What do you reckon?
I don't think that Kohli will touch the batting. Historically, he doesn't. He tends to rotate around the bowlers and the all-rounder spot. But he is one for changing his squad. I don't have the stats in front of me, but there is some crazy stat around how he's played a different 11, a very big percentage of his time as captain.
Well, serious talk aside, Raj, I mean, Stuart, Javo, big unit, looks like he could bowl at a reasonable clip, but I'm not sure that his fitness is probably up to test standards. So even though he managed to make his way onto the field during that second test, I doubt whether he would have the longevity to put in, you know, a shift like Siraj did or even, you know, Bumrah or Shami. So I don't see him playing any role moving forward for India. I think they're pretty well stocked for pace bowlers, and that looks like he's probably, 45 mile an hour, pretty pop gun kind of player, but he is pretty big in stature, so he could probably hit a long ball. Look, jokes aside, lads, 1-0 up after two tests, India. Are we changing any of our predictions? Is anyone prepared to change their predictions at this point?
Well, I think I'm gonna have to change mine because I went 3-2, so that's going to be almost impossible from here. But look, I can't see England getting on the board as I just said. And just, in closing, big up respect to the consummate professional Raj Reddy, not going to be drawn into any frivolous banter when we're talking about Test cricket. So, for me, India, clean sweep as long as the weather continues to play ball to the extent that it has so far, and that first Test match notwithstanding.
Well, Binksy's used his mulligan to go from 3-2 to 4-0. Raj, any update from you? Are you still happy with your series prediction?
Well, I had a 3-2 prediction earlier. I think, that's probably out the window now. I think that India are really in the box seat. The biggest issue I have now is that just the England bowling stocks have just taken a real hit. If someone like Mark Wood's not going to be there, if Broad's not going to be there, we know Broad's not going to be there. I don't know how they take 20 wickets. Or take 20 wickets for a small number versus the Indian quick bowlers. So, I think that three tests ago, this could be a 4-0 here.
Yeah, look, results have kind of gone out the window for me. I sort of feel like India's really taken the upper hand. I will say that I think that test was a lot closer than you guys are making out. I really do think England had a real sniff on that final morning. And when punt was dismissed, I sort of thought England was ahead, like I said. But, really, I'm just on Ashwin watch now. I just want to see him play. And maybe if India take an unassailable lead, they'll give their, second stringers like Ashwin a go, and I'll get to see him bowl.
Well, a 3-0 series lead after three tests, I think, is the only way that India will tinker with that squad. I can't see it happening. For me, I think I had a 3-1 from memory. That's probably still on the cards, although I really can't see where England can take a test off India at this point. So I think I'm with you guys. I think it's going to be only rain that's going to interrupt India's march to a 4-0 test series victory against England in England.
Awesome. Well, guys, whilst it wasn't particularly enjoyable talking through that last segment from an English perspective, plenty more cricket coming up. We are in lockdown here in Auckland, New Zealand, so recording remotely. We will be back on your airwaves, though, whatever happens over the next few weeks on a weekly basis. We will be reinstating the Hall of Fame as well. So watch out in the feed for the next episode of that. And please do dip back into the back catalogue as well. Particularly friend of the show, Shane Bond's done a couple of episodes with his recent addition to that New Zealand coaching staff. Good time to go and listen back to his thoughts on coaching and see what he's going to get out of those guys at the World T20. But for now, hear from remote locations all around Auckland, stretching into the far north. It's good night and God bless from all of us here at the Top Order Podcast. Good night.
Sports Social Podcast Network.